It's Friday, January 8th. They fled the chamber. Now they're fleeing the president. We start here. In the wake of an unprecedented siege, top Republicans cut ties with the Trump White House.
There are people going directly to Vice President Mike Pence asking for his help.
We've now learned the president is considering issuing a pardon to himself. So what else could be on the table? It's the question haunting Washington. Where were all the cops?
There was kind of a belief, well, these are Trump supporters. They're not going to be violent.
The chief of Capitol Police has offered his resignation, but the questions are not going to stop there. And for 4 years, they said they weren't in the business of silencing people.
According to Twitter, if he violates policy again, we'll face a permanent ban.
Well, now with 12 days to go in his term, social media companies are silencing the president. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It's been about 36 hours since the tear gas and the rioters cleared out of the U.S. Capitol. Let me say that again. Since the tear gas and rioters cleared out of the U.S. Capitol.
A mob, domestic terrorists, incited by the president, stormed the U.S. Capitol.
Rioters quickly overwhelming police and overtaking the hallowed halls.
They broke the glass. Everybody stay down.
Threatening the safety of duly elected officials. It's not protest. It's insurrection.
There is still one story with the power that can mold American democracy right now or shake your faith in it. And it continues to develop as I speak. So today, we're going to walk you through some of the conversations that have been unfolding since insurrectionists broke down the doors of the U.S. Capitol and since Congress finally declared Joe Biden the rightful 46th president of the United States. And of course, the biggest conversations are going to revolve around the 45th president, Donald Trump.
We want to go back and we want to get this right because we're going to have somebody in there that should not be in there and our country will be destroyed and we're not going to stand for that.
After all, it was misinformation from President Trump that was the premise for this attack. This baseless assertion that he had somehow gotten more votes despite recounts, court cases, and a complete lack of evidence.
From us.
They're not doing what's right by the American people. This election was stolen.
When the violence began, Trump appeared unable to tell these rioters to leave without praising them, too.
This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people.
President Trump takes sides. If you're on his side, he'll praise you. If you're not, he might try to destroy you. But now, after this vote in Congress, there is no question that President Trump will not be president anymore in 12 days. And everyone in Washington is answering a question of their own. Whose side are you on now? The fallout is getting very real in Washington this morning. Let's bring in ABC's John Santucci, who covers the White House. John, as of Wednesday morning, the Republican Party was the party of Donald Trump. Where does it stand right now?
Well, it's still the party of Donald Trump because he is still the president of the United States. He is still the leader of the Republican Party. But there's definitely a couple asterisks after that. Right now, Donald Trump is in crisis mode.
I just want to update our viewers. We are getting alerts from inside the Capitol right now that the Capitol has been breached. This is
as the White House aides were watching this, some of them were actually not watching it from the White House. Our sources told us many people did not show up to work on Wednesday for two reasons. One, they knew about the violence that was going to be coming around the White House because of these crowds, because of what President Trump was expected to say.
We're gathered together in the heart of our nation's capital for one very, very basic and simple reason, to save our democracy.
And the other part, Brad, is that after it was over and waiting for Congress to certify Joe Biden's election, these sources didn't want to be around the president.
The White House this morning, George, seems like a very lonely place. The president largely alone in the residence.
But what's most interesting, though, is what we've seen in reaction to the protests. Obviously, we've seen members of Congress and so many others come out and condemn it and say how awful it is.
Now we gather due to a selfish man's injured pride.
There's nothing Vladimir Putin could have come up with better than what happened here.
But the fact that we are hearing from people in the inner circles around this president that this was too much, we have seen almost half a dozen aides resign. We are hearing that other resignations are possible.
Today, one cabinet official resigned, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos telling Mr. Trump, quote, "There's no mistaking the impact your rhetoric had on the situation." She says it's the reason she's resigning.
Even John Kelly, President Trump's second White House chief of staff, his former Homeland Security Secretary.
What happened on Capitol Hill yesterday is a direct result of his, you know, poisoning the minds of people with the lies and the frauds.
He finally emerged and said enough was enough, that letting Trump be Trump led to the violence that we saw play out up on Capitol Hill.
If you were in the cabinet right now, would you vote to remove him from office?
Yes, I would.
My hope is that we can move forward in the next 14 days, but this will depend on what the president does. I am hopeful that the worst is behind us and we can transfer power on January 20th.
Well, it's weird, John, because on one hand, there's 12 days left, I bet a lot of people are thinking. Like, what could go wrong? But then you're clearly seeing this, like, sense of urgency from people that think President Trump could still incite more chaos, even potential violence. What kind of options would they realistically be considering, though?
Well, if you're a Republican in Washington or someone in the Trump administration, there have been several options that have been discussed. The 25th Amendment has certainly been discussed among Trump allies and members of the Trump cabinet as an option and a vehicle that they could explore. The other thing that has been discussed, and we have seen, obviously, Democrats jump on this first, but we have now seen Republicans on Capitol Hill do it too. Impeachment, Brad.
If there ever was an impeachable offense, what the president did was it.
A very dangerous person who should not continue in office. This is urgent.
But the third way, and we saw this a little bit actually on Wednesday, Brad, is that there's boxing out Donald Trump.
There has been nobody more loyal to Donald Trump than Mike Pence. And I am told just recently, David, that even to this moment, the vice president has not spoken to the president since all that went down yesterday at the Capitol. Which
there are
really
people going directly to Vice President Mike Pence asking for his help. As ABC News has reported, Donald Trump rebuffed efforts for the National Guard to go up to Capitol Hill to stop these horrible events from taking place on Wednesday. He did not take the action to send the National Guard. Our sources tell us it was Vice President Mike Pence that gave the order that eventually got this situation under control.
Which means, like, the most likely scenario here is just kind of this constitutional crisis where people are, like, going around the commander-in-chief. There have been questions, John, of whether other Republicans, you know, enabled the president to get to the point where it got to. Like, those who said, hey, of course he's going to honor a peaceful transition. Well, then guess what? Like, he's literally not in that moment. But last night, the president did end up putting out this video on Twitter.
My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation.
If not clearly conceding, at least acknowledging that his time in office is coming to an end. Does that take the pressure off for everyone to do something?
I don't think so. I think it's too little, too late. I think the video is out there. It'll maybe stop the bleeding.
The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy.
The fact of the matter is the damage is done. The Capitol has been desecrated. There is no turning back the clock on that. And the reality is, once again, and we've seen this, it feels like a repeat performance after Charlottesville, after so many incidents that have happened, after the death of someone that is an American icon. Donald Trump takes his dear sweet time to come out and do what he should have done. And on this case, Brad, it is well over 24 hours after the Capitol was desecrated that Donald Trump did the video that he should have done Wednesday afternoon. Forget Wednesday evening when that other video came out. He should have, as every person that's come out there and spoken out said, should have come out and done the video and moved past this and done the right thing.
Can we talk about what happens now going forward for President Trump? Like, on Wednesday,
sure,
we saw lots of criminal acts. Like, I'm not talking breaking and entering. Like, some of these are federal felonies involving political violence. But did President Trump or people who perhaps speak on behalf of President Trump, have they perhaps violated the law as well?
Well, listen, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't speak to those people, but I would certainly say that there are many people that are concerned about these actions and concern that there could be possible litigation. I had one source saying to me, we just want to clarify who was involved in the planning of that event Wednesday on the Mall, because you got to imagine the group that was behind that could be subject to some possible form of litigation. Mm-hmm. And for the president's part, we have been talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about presidential pardons. One of the things we've talked about are preemptive pardons, something the president and his aides have been discussing to give to members of his family and his close allies like Rudy Giuliani.
Let's have trial by combat.
But there's one other thing, Brad, and this has been talked about for quite some time, that would Donald Trump ever pardon himself?
Brad, what are we going to do? We won the election, and it's not fair to take it away from us like this.
We're told after that audio tape came out of President Trump basically intimidating officials in the state of Georgia to go find 11,000 votes and fix and redo this election for him, that people were concerned around the president, and so was he once they explained it to him, that he had legal culpability here. So it has come up, and we are told the president is leaning towards it. Not a done deal just yet.
Wait, leaning towards pardoning himself, John?
The president is leaning towards pardoning himself, Brad. I know one of the many phrases over these years I never thought I would say, but yes, our sources tell us Donald Trump is leaning towards pardoning himself.
You can just do that?
The experts are extremely torn on this, Brad. Almost everybody tells us it cannot be done. Now, the pardon power, it's broad. I mean, there are some people that say he does have a mechanism to do this, so it certainly will be played out in the courts if he does it. And, Brad, if he's charged with a crime, I mean, that's really where this comes down to. Remember, the president is under investigation right now in the state of New York. Those are state crimes. They're pardon proof. So even if he does this, and let's say it is legitimate, hypothetically there, if he gets charged by prosecutors and by the New York State Attorney General's office, which has one case, or the Manhattan DA's office, which has another, it doesn't mean that pardon's going to work.
Right.
That pardon, if it was to work, would apply to federal crimes. We don't know of anything yet, but God knows the last few days have certainly given a lot of ammunition to that possible fire.
Right, so much. There was such a controversial potential move there that you and your team have reported on. All right, John Santucci in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, if you had a working internet connection, you knew they were coming, so why didn't law enforcement? We're back after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is my hideaway office.
There are lots of questions right now about the future of government. But when you look back on Wednesday, one of the biggest questions remaining is, how did the U.S. Capitol fall so easily?
It might have been unlocked. The hooligans who attacked the Capitol smashed the door virtually off its hinges.
If you watch a movie like Olympus Has Fallen, you would think it would take a small army to overrun the White House. So why were a bunch of people in tennis shoes waving flags able to storm the other crown jewel of American democracy with a good chunk of our country's power structure inside? Let's bring in ABC's Jack Date, who coordinates our justice and homeland security coverage. Jack, you've been sourced up with D.C. law enforcement for years, right? Like, let me be blunt. Was this an abject failure by the forces that guard the Capitol?
Clearly, there were huge failures in what happened in terms of the planning and execution and really how the entire event played out, that many people got that close, that they breached in multiple locations. As one former Capitol Police chief put it to me, it was a nightmare scenario.
There were posts warning of violence on social media, on right-wing websites, from groups like the Boogaloo and the Proud Boys. The Anti-Defamation League put out a release earlier this week outlining specific threats to members of Congress. As early as December 19th, President Trump encouraging supporters to come, tweeting, "Be there, we'll be wild."
Tell me where you're from.
I'm from Pennsylvania.
And drove down just for this.
And we came in for this.
It's not like we didn't know this was going to happen. This has been telegraphed. This demonstration had been sort of publicized, promoted all the way to the president. The president himself had promoted it. It was happening. Everybody knew it was happening. All these people were going to show up at the Capitol. In preparing for that, there should have been more work to harden the Capitol. We've seen around the White House complex when there's an expectation of major protests, they'll put like a non-scalable fence, a temporary fence around the whole complex.
There we go, open the door!
There were so many images of those who broke through doors and windows, climbing up the walls of the Capitol, crawling through windows.
It's hard to say why they didn't do that in terms of perhaps hardening the area further to keep people from climbing over, you know, those simple bike racks that you see. They're held together with zip ties. They're not particularly secure, and you can literally climb right over.
And they just reached the Capitol again.
Another group of riders, too much for this lone officer, who turned around and ran back up the stairs.
But behind them, you know, where's the support? If those lines are breached, who's there to help? And in this case, not much.
Okay, well, I mean, that's my question. Where the hell was everyone?
Anyone in charge of defending the Capitol failed.
The frustration was really palpable among lawmakers who, you know, some of them had to spend significant amounts of time crouched under desks and crouched behind furniture and locked into their offices. It was a terrifying scene.
Inside that building yesterday were the top three people in the line of succession to become president. And it took nearly 3 hours for any Department of Defense response to arrive at the Capitol.
They rely on the Capitol Police to secure their workplace, to secure the environment that they're in.
But there was a failure of leadership at the top of the Capitol Police. And I think Mr. Sund, he hasn't even called us since this happened. You know, so I had made aware that I would be saying that we're calling for his resignation. Now,
lawmakers were furious and wanted accountability, and they wanted people fired. They wanted people to lose their jobs. The sergeant at arms in the House and Senate and the chief of police for the Capitol, U.S. Capitol Police. And clearly the head of the Capitol Police saw the writing on the wall and tendered his resignation effective on the 16th.
Well, you know, we can talk about tactics and preparation. I think there's also this question of perception, right? Like, who's dangerous in this country? Because the immediate observation from especially a lot of people of color was, do you really think that a group of black or brown people would have gotten this far going into the U.S. Capitol past barricades with a current and future vice president and the House Speaker inside? Could they have done all that without just a bloodbath?
It's an excellent question. It's something that I've heard from law enforcement officials that I've talked to. It's something that I've heard from, you know, just colleagues and from family and from friends.
So our intention was, once we were in the building, we started talking with Capitol Police to the point where we told them, you know, it wasn't personal. We just want our voices heard.
You know, in talking to, you know, security officials in advance of this event, there was kind of a belief, well, these are Trump supporters. They're not going to be violent.
God bless you. Hey, God bless you, sir. Treason! No one else, nobody get hurt. All right, we still respect you, all right? Not personal to you. Freedom! Freedom!
St. John's Church in Lafayette Square, of course, that was site of the moment where President Trump went across that street as protesters were out there for the Black Lives Matter Matters movement, brandish a Bible.
We saw what happened at Lafayette Square. And that was a largely peaceful demonstration. And they weren't trying to breach the White House fence.
But then, almost suddenly, U.S. Park and Secret Service police began shoving and hitting.
What they got was violence.
We've seen time and time again over the last 7 years that Black Lives Matter members who go out and protest to save our lives, to fight for Black lives, are met with rubber bullets.
And in this case, you have, you know, this mob, this unruly mob taking over the place.
More than 50 officers were hurt clashing with the mob. But there are also videos that appear to show officers moving the barricades aside.
Oh, there we go.
Another one in a rioter's selfie.
It's just unfathomable, and people are just absolutely gobsmacked at how differently the two audiences were treated.
Last question for you, Jack. Are we going to see more arrests of people who were here? Because like a lot of them seem to be like ushered out the door as if they'd just been kicked out of a baseball game or something, right? Like as if they hadn't just committed like a major potential felony. Is there a sense that somebody who's posting their picture on Facebook being like, hey, look what I broke into the other day, that they will be arrested either by federal or local forces?
Absolutely. There is going to be a significant effort across the country.
To my knowledge, only one of the arrestees is from the District of Columbia. I just want to underscore that. Only one of the arrestees was from the District of Columbia. However, we still have a significant amount of work ahead of us.
This will not go unchecked. The Department of Justice, federal law enforcement officers, the D.C. Metropolitan Police already posted, be on the lookout posters for individuals that were in the Capitol that police want to track down for specific crimes.
At 9 a.m. this morning, we began erecting a 7-foot non-scalable fence.
Going forward, there are going to have to be some meaningful steps taken to try to make sure that the next time there's a crisis event like this in the District of Columbia, that appropriate communications and resources can be brought to bear.
So when we talk about the inauguration, that is a national security event. And that rises to a different level of security protection. We want every day at the Capitol to be deemed a national security event, so that there's no, well, I didn't know, and blah, 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 that highest level of concern.
You know, for our adversaries, this is not a good message to have out there, that our country is this vulnerable. And it's going to take a long time to repair the notion that the United States and its government is safe and secure.
And there are going to be questions about attitudes, assumptions, preparations here. But if you thought none of these police officers were trying their level best to keep the building secure, well, officials now say a Capitol Police officer who got caught in an altercation with rioters was injured and later succumbed to those injuries in the hospital. A police officer has now been killed because of this event. Jack Date in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Now, if we've been talking about politicians kind of grappling with their own complicity in what we saw this week, where does that leave social media companies? ABC's chief business and technology correspondent Rebecca Jarvis is here. Rebecca, we saw President Trump get essentially banned from Twitter for 12 hours just to be reinstated. He had to pull down several tweets. It looks like we're, watching a sitting president who's banned or at risk of getting banned from like all social media platforms.
That's exactly what we're seeing, Brad. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube all removed this video of the president telling the rioters,
"We love you. You're very special."
They all took this stance almost simultaneously. But the video had been posted and it had been up for some time and it was shared prior to the different platforms taking it down. The bigger step is now this ban, which Facebook says will be indefinite, at least for the remaining days of the president's term as president. According to Twitter, if he violates policy again, will face a permanent ban. For a long time, Facebook has said that they are a platform for communication.
"Every day, millions of Americans use the internet to share their experiences and discuss issues that matter to them.
And that people who communicate, whether it is true or otherwise, can use the platform."
"How do we balance free expression and safety? How do we define what is dangerous? Who should decide? I don't believe that private companies should be making so many decisions about these issues by themselves."
But they've really changed their stance here. And there was a note that Mark Zuckerberg put out early yesterday in light of the fact that Facebook announced that there would be this ban until at least the end of the presidency for Donald Trump, saying that the current context is now fundamentally different, involving use of our platform to incite violent insurrection against a democratically elected government. We believe the risks of allowing the president to continue use of our service during this period are simply too great.
Well, they can say that the circumstances have changed, Rebecca. Sure, like now it looks different because there was violence. But the claims that President Trump is making, this is not the first time he's claimed there's been widespread voter fraud. He did it in 2016.
"I think I did win the popular vote in a true sense."
He did in 2017. He formed a commission that didn't show it. And yet he kept making these claims. And for years, they were not taken down. So if these were bedrock principles, it sounds like perhaps they've shifted. I'm wondering, is it too cynical of me to wonder, Rebecca, if these social media companies are playing a bit of politics themselves here, too, because Democrats have sounded the alarm on wanting to break up these companies. Well, now these social media companies are saying things that Democrats have been calling for years. Is this maybe not just about these companies' commitment to democracy, but maybe, you know, some dollars and cents?
Well, you're not alone in questioning and wondering about that. There are plenty on their very platforms right now who are raising the same question. It's important to remember where these platforms get paid. They make their money on ad revenue, and advertisers pay lots of money to be on these platforms because of the engagement, the fact that we all spend hours upon hours every day. Now, if President Trump no longer carries the weight that he once did and no longer is running for an election, no longer has something to sell, or has a lot of people who are interested in buying it, that's less ad revenue coming from him and coming from his supporters onto these platforms. And so while there's certainly a regulatory component here, there's also the bottom line.
My sense is that we are looking at the end of the Trump era.
If Trump has less clout, if he's not a kingmaker, if he's not a contender in any future election, if he's not out pushing for the elections of others, that's a lot less ad revenue coming from him and his supporters to the platforms.
Which also means it's less of a risk to your bottom line, perhaps, to silence him right now compared to what it would have been a few years ago. All right, Rebecca Jarvis, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. While this story in Washington was deadly for some and frightening for many, many more around the world, the deadliest thing on Earth right now continues to be COVID-19.
I saw a beautiful 95-year-old woman who was in pain lying in the back of an ambulance for 12 hours. There was absolutely nothing we could do to get her into that hospital because there was no more room in the hospital.
Yesterday, as Johns Hopkins University updated its death toll, we noticed something. If you went from 5 p.m. Wednesday to 5 p.m. Thursday, Hopkins had counted more than 4,000 deaths. That is the first time in this pandemic that 4,000 Americans have died in a 24-hour period.
It's every 6 seconds now a new case, and every 8 minutes somebody's dying here.
In Los Angeles, Mayor Eric Garcetti said if you took all the city's homicides in 2019, COVID recently surpassed that number in 1 day. But if COVID is the worst killer we've ever seen, this at least is a lifesaver.
In order to speed up the vaccination process, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announcing an accelerated rollout program that will include 19 pharmacy chains in more than 40,000 locations across the United States.
Probably heard about isolated allergic reactions to the vaccine so far. Well, American health officials now say they are really isolated, like shockingly rare. The CDC now estimates that for every 1 million shots, maybe 11 result in a reaction that is truly life-threatening. 11 out of 1 million. And by the way, remember Lisa Mastretta, the hospice nurse who told us here in Start Here that her Christmas tree would not have gifts under it because she couldn't work until she got a vaccine, that she was still on unemployment. Well, last night, she left us a message.
Hi, this is Lisa Mastretta. On January 5th, I was finally able to get my first Pfizer vaccine COVID dose.
Remember, the vaccine goes to current healthcare workers. She had to quit her job because of her pre-existing condition. She was no longer considered an active healthcare worker, but she tells us after a ton of support, she pleaded her case to local officials and she got a call to come in.
So far, I've had no bad reactions to it, just a sore arm, which is great. So that means I am getting closer to getting back to hospice nursing.
It's a small victory in the scheme of things, but this week, we'll take all the good news we can get. Trying to get through all this together, me, you, all of us. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Trevor Hastings, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimbel, Lauren Efron, and Lewis Millman. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Rachel Katz, George Suarez, Pat O'Gara, Sarah Kolonofsky, Matthew Seiler, Andrew Evans, and Louis Martinez. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.